Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. A cool, crisp afternoon. A lot of people out and about in Chicago. Big show tonight. Of course, we will be keeping track of Irma. You'll be getting Irma updates throughout the hours here at WGN from ABC News. So we will be going to those as, well, as scheduled. What are we doing? I'm like at 20 after the hour and then at the top and bottom and at 50 after the hour.
So exactly.
We'll be doing that. I'll be trying to stay on time because I've been warned that this is very important. And so I will be, I'll be doing that. Of course, we're thinking it. I hate saying this because it sounds so trite to say our thoughts are with everybody down in Florida, but really it is because if you haven't been to Florida, you might know people in Florida. Maybe you have some property in Florida. So before you start complaining that why do we have to keep hearing about the updates of the hurricane? Because it's happening right now, and it's changing paths, and millions of people are being affected by that, so we will be updating that. A lot of other stuff to get to tonight. Always more fun when you get involved. 312-981-7200. That, of course, the phone and the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. I can't believe I'm back at work golf. He's the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. He was jealous that I got to go through Rockford last week without him. So be nice to him. You get to me. That's how it works. Social media, you know how it works. Brian Noonan Show, Facebook, Twitter. That's what we do. All right. So we're gonna be covering that. We had a guest lined up in Florida. But as you can imagine, cell service is sketchy at best. If you've been watching the Weather Channel and Jim Cantore, if Jim Cantore ever shows up at your house, run. Because you know hell's coming with him. It's like Jim Cantore is the fifth horseman of the apocalypse. He shows up when only the worst weather is happening. Remember, he was here right outside this very window during the polar vortex.
And wasn't there like some thunder boomers happening?
Yes, there was thunder, snow, and people were freezing to death the minute they walked outside. And so if you see Jim Cantore on your street, I don't care what the governor tells you. I don't care what local officials tell you. I don't care what the fake media tells you. I don't care what Rush Limbaugh tells you. You see Jim Cantore on your street, run. Run.
As fast
because,
as you can.
Oh, my goodness. I will say, I tease the weather monkeys a lot because, you know, a lot of times they're on or off. Tom Skilling, a wonderful meteorologist. We have some great weather people in town. But I do tease them occasionally. I'll tell you who I'm never teasing again. Any of these lunatics who work for the Weather Channel. My God.
Yeah.
I guess this is what they live for.
Oh, well, that's what it's called, the weather.
I know, but if you have to put on a helmet to go do your job and you're not wearing a jersey, that's scary.
Pods.
Right. Yeah. You know, these guys are standing, whoever is in Naples for the Weather Channel now, he's out there and he's trying to, I gotta give it to him, he's trying to conceal his look because he's got his blue weather jacket rain slicker hood pulled up over his helmet. But I'm like, he either has something on under that hood or he's the Great Gazoo from the Flintstones because his head is ginormous.
Yeah, and you see the ones with the goggles on.
Yes.
I love the ones
Cantore wears the cool, like you'd wear if you were a basketball player who had an eye injury. So he's wearing goggles. Yeah. I don't think he had a helmet on, but when I was watching him, he still was not in the, he wasn't in the thick of it yet.
Yeah.
It was coming his way. But, again, he was just waiting. He did, if I'm Marriott, I'm sending him a muffin basket tomorrow.
Was he right in front of him?
Well, he was in between a courtyard and a Residence Inn. Two Marriott properties. And he kept talking about the Marriott and how he was in the parking lot between the Marriotts. And I'm thinking, man, again, if you're Marriott, you don't even want Jim Cantore coming to your place. Even just on vacation, I'm like, Jim, I'm sorry, we can't accept your reservation. Why not? Your track record.
Well, but they probably didn't show was the front doors of each of them with the managers yelling at him to move somewhere else, probably, because they didn't want the storm to come right there.
Yeah.
Because you knew,
exactly.
You know, the hurricane, Irma's spinning, says, where's Cantore? Where is he? I got to send her right over.
He's like that character in the Gulliver's Travels cartoon where the rain cloud just...
No, that's Lil Abner.
Is that Lil Abner?
Yeah, Lil Abner.
I think it's a common premise.
Yeah.
Almost like Piglet, where the rain cloud just follows him around. Mm-hmm. I think that's Jim Cantore.
Yeah.
But these guys on the weather and women on the Weather Channel, these reporters are out of their minds. I saw one just get blown down the street, and another one, this was on, I think, one of the ABC affiliates in somewhere in Florida. This woman was talking to them, mm-hmm. and then she started getting blown down the street. And she's like, we're going to go in. It's kind of dangerous out here. And these are the same people who are telling everybody else to flee.
Yeah.
But they, I guess that's...
It's our job.
That's their... Yeah, sure.
Seriously.
Well,
I would.
It's your fake job. I'm
no,
going to say that's. All, I'm going to say there's not even a hurricane. That people are just standing in front
no,
of a
don't
green
doing
screen.
That, no.
Who am I? Yeah, that I'm Rush Limbaugh and I'm fleeing for my life and not tell you where I'm going to broadcast from out of security reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to tell everybody where I'm broadcasting.
On his private jet? Wasn't it a private jet? I think so.
You think he flies commercial?
No, I don't think
Please.
So.
Please.
No.
Please. Come on. He's on the opium 400. He's
wow.
Yeah, he's on the oxy 747. He's out of town.
Oh gosh.
Yes, I know. I was very mean. Very mean. What am I going to do? So we're going to see if our guest is available, we will talk to him after 6:30. If not, obviously there's reasons why, and we understand that. So it's tough because You don't want to make this about you, but like I said, a lot of us have either friends or family or people we know who have property. My brother and sister-in-law just sold their house here because uh-huh. they bought a house on Anna Maria Island, which is on Where the West that? Coast,
oh,
right
okay.
just south of Tampa,
uh-huh.
which is right in the hit zone.
Oh gosh.
So I talked to my brother and he was like, yeah, I don't know if my house is going to survive.
Well, my
he's supposed to move there in 3 weeks.
Oh, jeez. Well, my friend Gloria has been trying to sell her condo in one of the high tall structures down there, and I forgot exactly where it is. And I think she was supposed to go down and close, like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like this past weekend, like this weekend. I think she was supposed to close. And obviously could not get down there, and I have no idea what's going on.
No.
She was extremely upset about the damage that might happen.
Yeah, and my wife's cousins and aunt and uncle are in the Orlando area, and you know, a couple days ago, Orlando looked like it was going to get rain. It was going to feel the effects, but it wasn't right in the direct path of the hurricane. And now that's changed.
Yeah, now they're getting like some of the strongest winds. Looking at one of the maps, and every time the time lapse goes around, this red border. Indicating
well,
the highest winds possible.
Yeah, they're at the like the northeast corner of. I've learned, haven't we all become amateur meteorologists this week? Learning about the cone of uncertainty
mm-hmm.
and the rotation of a hurricane and why being on the northeast quadrant of the hurricane's eye is the worst part because that's where the winds whip out.
Mm-hmm.
And if the eye is perfect as opposed to the eye wall getting a little jaggedy, I feel like we could all do this now. And of course we can't. But I'll tell you what, I think I'd look good in a blue slicker and a helmet. You know?
Yeah.
And I got a little more heft to me.
Yeah,
I may
do.
Not get blown away like some of these small TV reporters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go down there, you know, I may be able to withstand a 75-degree wind as opposed to some of these guys who are getting blown away by a 60.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not going to be, wasn't it Dan Rather? Who made his mark? He lashed himself to a tree during a hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good for Dan Rather.
Yeah,
that's never gonna happen. I would lash Cody to a tree,
and then he would like it.
Right. Well, then I'd have him. I'd have a little radio. All right, we got to take a break because we have to get an Irma update from ABC News, and then we will talk about some more things on the other side. WGN. Now to the newsroom.
Let's join ABC.
Now, the Keys were mostly evacuated by the time Irma hit. ABC's Amy Robach there now with someone who tried to ride it out.
Up in Key Largo, David Kay hunkered down, documenting Irma's wrath.
We're doing all right. We survived.
Water starting to flood outside his home. A few hours later, that property underwater.
Almost 3 million customers statewide without power. With continuing coverage, Hurricane Irma. Daria Albinger. ABC News.
And we'll have our next update coming up at 6:30. Back to you.
Thank you. Wake up and watch the new WGN-TV Early Morning News with Lauren Jiggins and Dan Ponce, traffic with Sarah Jindra, and weather with Morgan Kolkmeyer. It's weekday mornings 4 to 6 a.m. All right. Yes, that's going to be the way it goes today. We are jumping back and forth to get the ermine. Now, somebody texts in, don't forget the U.S. Virgin Islands. Yes, we don't forget the U.S. Virgin Islands. We don't forget Puerto Rico, all of which sustained horrible damage with Irma. Those are all U.S. territories, so we are not forgetting them. But let's be honest, right now we're worried about Florida, which is getting hit as we speak. So don't get all testy that we didn't mention everything that was hit. Of course, there was a lot of devastation throughout the Caribbean,
yeah.
And that's horrifying. But right now, we're looking at the continental United States and Florida, which has, you know, had its fair share of hurricanes come through, and this one, you know, thankfully it doesn't seem to be quite as horrible as was predicted, and that doesn't mean that it is not horrible. I can't imagine what's going on. We were talking about the Weather Channel reporters and these other reporters from ABC News and all the other networks that are out there now. And somebody, I mentioned, you know, these are the same people that are telling people to run away, and they're out there. And a couple people texted in saying, yeah, I don't understand that either. Is it going to take one of these reporters getting killed for them to stop this foolishness? But let's be honest, we want to see it. The networks know this. The news directors aren't going to be, nobody's voluntarily going to say, you know what, I'm not going to put my people out there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be out there. These reporters know. And for a lot of, it sounds very harsh, but for a lot of these reporters, these are the kind of stories that launch their careers.
Not only that, but this is their job.
Right, and it is their job.
Yeah.
And they know that. So those are the people who... Those are the people who don't evacuate. And I've been talking about this on Twitter and asking these questions, and it's not a judgment call because I know, or it's not a judgment from me, rather, mm-hmm. and that's unusual. I know because you know I'm here to judge.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I judge. I make wild pronouncements, and I look either up or down at people, never sideways.
Yeah. Judge and jury.
And a lot of times the executioner, Uh-oh. Which is my favorite part. But... I've been thinking a lot about these areas where they say there's mandatory evacuations or highly suggested. And you hear the state officials, you hear the governor of Florida, you hear local officials saying, listen, you've got to get out. We're not going to come rescue you. We have to get our first responders off the street too because things are horrible down here. And I realize that there is a big chunk of the population that cannot evacuate, whether it's for financial reasons, job reasons, mental health, physical health. There's a lot of people who can't evacuate.
Yeah.
The people I wonder about are the people who could. They have the means to evacuate. Mm-hmm. They have the notice, and yet they don't. And again, it's not a judgment because I know everybody has different reasons. Some people have ridden out hurricanes before.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't want to be gone and then try to come back because once they close down an area, they're very slow to let you back in.
Right.
So you want to make sure if you want to know that you still have a home or a business, you're going to stay. So it's one of those I would be very interested to talk to people and I'm not going to find them here and we can't get them down there because there's no cell service anywhere or very limited cell service. What makes somebody stay who doesn't have to? I mean, if you have a job where they say, okay, listen, you have a job where you know you can work remotely, whatever, you can work from somewhere else, or you have family and you have the financial means to get out. And I know in previous hurricanes, more people have died being stranded on the road, because if you believe, and why wouldn't you, the reports and the videos that we saw of the traffic jams trying to get out of South Florida, which really only has two ways out on the East Coast and one way out on the West Coast, you know, is it better to hunker down in your house and lay in your bathtub rather than be out and risk being stuck on the... on the highway when gas was hard to come by, supplies were hard to come by. So I don't know if there doesn't seem to be a right answer there, because you're put in a position that is untenable. Either you stay and something horrible happens, or you risk leaving and potentially something horrible happens, or you go to one of these shelters, which were filling up so fast. And then you can't get back to even survey whatever damage there might be.
Yeah.
in your home. Right. It's
and there's two other groups now that you can add to that. One, the storm went where they didn't expect it to. They expected it to go up the East Coast, so that's where they were moving people out of. Then it shifted around to the West Coast.
Right.
Now, is there enough time to get those people out of the way? Not really.
No.
Because here comes the storm. It's not like you had a week like you did on the East Coast.
Right. And the people don't, you know, they didn't have time to board up their homes.
Right.
They were doing it. They were doing it up till today.
Yeah.
You know?
Then there's the other group of people who have lived there for a long time and have lived through hurricanes before.
Yeah.
And they have done things to their homes or apartments or whatever. And we're hearing a lot about hurricane-proof windows.
Right.
You know, solid cement walls as opposed to brick walls.
Well, let me take this call because Dan is on the Skyway. And Dan, you have two siblings. Hi, how are you?
How you doing? I got two younger brothers, two younger sisters, all in their 50s and 60s that live down there. I've been in contact with all of them this afternoon. My one brother's 40 miles south of West Palm Beach.
Okay.
And he's in a CVS, cinder block and stucco house. Got hurricane windows, hurricane shutters. His comment was he went, got 4 cases of wine, 2 cases of beer, 100 gallons of gas. All his trucks are gassed up, and he got ammo because they're all afraid of looting.
Like, and there's already been reports and videos of looting starting.
Absolutely. And my two sisters live in a subdivision in Jupiter, and they're only a mile off. My brother's a mile off the Atlantic. My sisters are in Jupiter, and they're a mile off the water also by the Jupiter Inlet, where they're going to have a big surge. And the exact same thing. They're not leaving because of that. They've been down there. My brother's been down there for 40 years. My sisters have been down there for 10 and 18 years. And my other brother, he's inland. He's the only one we haven't been able to get a hold of, so we don't work at that right now. And I've got a place in Sarasota, and we're dead in the eye of it.
Yeah.
They're not going to leave because they're afraid of that, and that's the reason why.
Yeah, and it's, again, Dan, I'm not judging. I just, to me, there's a part of me that I understand wanting to stay. I can also understand wanting to leave. I've never been in that situation, thankfully, but it's an interesting predicament, and it's one I think most of us would rather never have to come across.
No, like my brother Mike says, he says he's been through 10 of them in the 40 years down there.
Yeah.
He was near enough to homestead, which is an hour and a half north of Miami. They went through it. You know, they lost their roof. My mom lost her roof at Hugo, and my sisters did. But, you know, they'd rather stay in their houses than get away because you never know what's going to come back to.
Yeah.
You see that going on in Houston right now.
Exactly. Well, Dan, I appreciate the call. We got to get to the news. I hope, fingers crossed for all your siblings, hopefully, and everybody down there. I appreciate the call. All right, on the other side of the news, a couple stories, interesting stories, and little lighter stories coming out of Florida. We'll get to those, and we'll have an Irma update during the news on WGN. From the 219 says, my kids are at Disney. What's going on in Orlando?
I'm sorry.
I got this. I know this is a big news day for you. And trust me, I will ask. I will ask for your help. But I've got, you know.
I know you do.
I have answers. I'm not going off half-cocked. According to the Orlando Sentinel, their 5 p.m. update was that Orlando is no longer under the cone of certainty, or uncertainty, rather, the cone of uncertainty, but there is still danger of damage for possible tornadoes, and because the storm is nearly 400 miles wide, they're not out of danger yet. And as Roger started to jump in, Disney World, the parks, and Disney Springs are closed through Monday. They are hoping to reopen on Tuesday based on the weather. They were opening their, you know, the hotels are there, obviously, mm-hmm. still going. What I found a little, and, you know, I know Disney is Disney. The only thing they were giving people who were stranded there for free was free Disney movies in the room. If you wanted free Disney movie, this was somebody posted a flyer that they passed out at Disney World the other day. So that they were advising people that the restaurants are going to be open, but they're going to be very crowded. If you had a car, they were advising you to go. Now, this was Friday and Saturday. They were advising you to go to local markets and get whatever you could get to have in your room because they anticipated the lines and everything. Because imagine how crowded, if you've ever been to Disney, you know how crowded the restaurants are on a regular day. So imagine when everybody has to be in there all the time. So the parks are closed until Tuesday. The hotels are open. The people are, you know, as safe as they can be. Orlando seems to be out of immediate danger, but not in the clear yet. So that's they are out of the cone of uncertainty. So.
And we're still looking at some red outlined areas just edging along Orlando as far as extreme winds and possible tornado activity on the weather radar map. So, and to give you the extent of the storm, we're not just talking about the eye of the hurricane and around
the
center.
No, of course not.
This thing now, the outer rings of this storm are already reaching past Hilton Head Island.
Yeah, it's going to go into Tennessee and Georgia and the Carolinas and everybody. You know, they're saying, I was watching today, one of our local guys was saying by Wednesday we may get some rain Wednesday evening as a result of this.
Yeah,
too.
It's supposed to track into the southern Illinois area with 35 mile an hour winds.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Yeah.
And to think that, you know, the width of the storm is wider than Florida. You're like, oh, man, nobody's getting out of there unscathed.
Yeah.
But being Florida, I know, listen, sometimes brevity helps in a situation like this. I want to say only in Florida because we didn't hear about this in Texas. So I'm going to stick with only in Florida. Florida Sheriff's Office warns people not to shoot at Hurricane Irma. Yes, a Facebook campaign started the other day by a guy. They say it was obviously a joke, but the Pasco County Sheriff's Office figured, well, you know what? We're gonna make sure that people don't know. Before the hurricane made landfall today, more than 54,000 people had signed up for the Facebook event Shoot at Hurricane Irma. Let's show Irma we shoot first, said the description of the event. Because Florida, of course, a stand your ground state. So the sheriff's department, well, they decided we're not going to risk that people know this is a joke because, you know, people are goofy. To clarify, this is a tweet from the Pasco County Sheriff, at Pasco Sheriff. To clarify, do not, in all caps, and Cody, you're a social media guy, so when you put something in all caps, that means you're serious. Do not shoot weapons at hashtag Irma. You won't make it turn around, and it will have very dangerous side effects. And the fact that you have to tell people not to shoot at a hurricane scares me quite a bit. But over 99% of the people out there have common sense, the sheriff said, and are listening. But we in law enforcement deal with the 1%, so we're trying to get the message to them. Chris Nocco is the Pasco County Sheriff. People should probably not go outside when the storm hits, certainly not with guns a-blazing. One of the organizers of the event thought that the sheriff's response was hilarious. He said, I figured law enforcement officers of all people would understand the humor behind the group. He also said he's surprised by the popularity of the group and speculates it might be because people didn't realize it was a joke. See, that's why then the sheriff has to send out that message. Because if you, as the organizers, say that people aren't going to understand it, let's look at 90% of the stories that come out of Florida. I'm going to guess that's a pretty good estimate that only 1% or that 99% maybe aren't going to figure it out. What do you think's going to happen if you shoot at Irma? I see one of these, you know, the Weather Channel guys with a 12 gauge and their big helmet on, just blasting away. I don't know. Jim Cantore's all strapped, just shooting at Irma. Don't come on. It's like that scene from Forrest Gump where Lieutenant Dan is strapped to the boat and he's just screaming at God as the hurricane rolls through. That's kind of what I see as happening here when you're going to shoot at a hurricane.
I mean, to be fair, if there's a bright flashing spot, it might be at half health. And that would be the weak point that you're aiming for.
Oh, you shoot at that part. Yeah, it's like going for the soft underbelly of a dragon when you're fighting them.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So you shoot at the eye, because the eye is where everything's calm.
Generally, yeah. I have killed dragons named Irma.
Have you really?
Yeah, small world.
It is very coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you're in the eye, that's where you could do some damage to a dragon or a hurricane. But other than that, we are getting... getting reports that they're also having characters visit the resorts in Disney to help the people who are stuck there. And you got to figure, okay, you know, well, that's good. It's going to help with the little kids. But also, all the employees at Disney have families and stuff. They all live around, you know. That's Orlando is a tourist-based community or tourism-based community. So all those people who staff the parks and the hotels, and that would be awful to have to be at work at the hotels knowing that your family could be in danger down the street. And I'm guessing a lot of those jobs are jobs that you can't just not show up and come back to work on Tuesday after the hurricane passes. You're either there or you're done.
You think maybe they ask for volunteers to stay behind and help out as opposed to maybe being with their families or trying to get out of the area and then come back later? You think maybe Disney gave them that option?
We haven't seen it. Listen, this is not I'm not slamming Disney. I'm just saying there's a lot of levels to this story. Somebody also, I saw a couple posts. My old producer, Lindsay. Remember Lindsay? She's a wonderful news reporter in Omaha, Nebraska. Posted a report that there's hundreds of animals just being tied to trees and left. People are just leaving their animals tied to trees. And so authorities down there are saying they are going to try to capture those or, you know, find out who did that.
Why would they do that?
Because they can't tell. I don't know why you would tie it up. You know, they're trying to evacuate. They don't think they can take their pet, and so they're just tired. We saw a couple reports on that in Houston, too. People just, if you're going to abandon your animal, just abandon it. Let it, you know, let it fend for itself, but, you know.
To tie it and not give it the opportunity to, you know, that's just wrong.
You know who's taking care of their animals, Cody? The guys at Gator Park.
Nice transition, Brian.
Thank you. More than 2,000 alligators are hunkering down at Gatorland Wildlife Preserve in Orlando. Park officials assure tourists and locals not to worry. The gators aren't going anywhere, which is good. You don't want gators sucked up in a hurricane. This isn't our first rodeo, said the park director, as his employees prepared to close the 110-acre theme park located roughly 13 miles outside of Walt Disney World. We have a detailed hurricane procedure in place. We have double fences, a large perimeter fence that goes around the entire property. So there was trouble. They were nervous because during Harvey, I don't know if you saw this, when Hurricane Harvey hit, there was threats. The rising floodwaters threatened to release hundreds of gators from Gator Country, an animal sanctuary in Beaumont, and not the great song by Molly Hatchet. Water nearly flooded over the fences surrounding the reptiles, threatening their enclosure. Gatorland, where the largest gators are 14 feet long, even if one of their 8-foot-tall fences gets destroyed or blown away, they are still not getting off this property. So that's good to know. The gators are safe. There won't be wily gators just wandering around Orlando. Because, you know.
Who's the cartoon alligator?
I don't know.
Captain, the one that ate Captain Hook's?
No. Not that, the Saturday morning cartoon.
He's the guy in the derby hat. Not the derby hat, the skimmer.
Yeah, and he had like a little lisp or something.
I don't remember.
I'm trying to remember now.
Oh, and going back, I was correct. Remember when I said Jim Cantore had the dark cloud over him like one of the characters in Gulliver's Travels, the cartoon, and Roger jumped in and corrected me? I was right. Glum is the character from Gulliver's Travel. Who had the cloud? I know.
And there's another character that has the exact same thing.
Second time,
Lil Abner.
You're jumping all over me today, Roger.
Wally Gator?
Wally
Gator. Yeah, there you go.
Wally Gator.
Yeah.
That's him. That's his agent. Are you mentioning Wally Gator? I gotta get a little cut of that. I don't. No, the gator's name is not Pogo. Pogo is not a gator. What is Pogo?
Pogo is a cartoon, and there was an alligator in Pogo, but not the one not the one I'm talking about.
Alligator, there we go. Very good.
Pogo was, I believe, a possum.
I was going to say. Yeah. Yes, I knew Pogo was not an alligator. He was some sort of farmer.
But there's a fellow character in that strip that is an alligator. Right. So,
So Wally Gator. Listen, Cody's doing all sorts of research. I'm not going to second guess Cody.
That was a cease and desist phone call right there from Wally Gator's agents.
From Wally Gator's agents?
Yeah.
Oh, his people. Wow. Yeah.
He's happily retired and does not want to be bothered. He does not live in Florida.
Really?
That's what he said.
Does he live in Beaumont, Texas?
I didn't ask.
You should have, because that's where, you know, maybe he escaped. But they had some trouble over there.
I'll investigate.
All right, so we will not be bothering Wally Gator. We will not be sending him anything. We're going to break now and get an Irma update right after this on WGN. Let's go to the newsroom for an Irma update.
Tom Yamas in Fort Myers.
You know, I've covered a lot of these hurricanes. Is Irma different? I mean, all hurricanes are horrible. All hurricanes are nasty. They're wind and rain monsters, and that's what we're seeing with Irma. It's a massive storm. It's hitting so much of this state. I think that's going to be the legacy of this storm, that it sort of encompassed all of Florida, which we haven't seen with other hurricanes.
It's going to be a long time before life is back to normal in the Keys. ABC's Amy Robach is there.
Residents are being told to boil water in the area in case that water system has been compromised. And crews will be getting out there to assess the damage as soon as the roads become passable. But in the meantime, they are telling residents they will not be getting home anytime soon.
The statewide, nearly 3 million and customers are without power. Curfews in effect as night falls, or they will soon be in effect in a number of towns and cities. With continuing coverage, Hurricane Irma, Daria Albinger, ABC News.
And to give you a sense of how widespread this hurricane is, Macon, Georgia is already starting to see rain from the outer rings of Hurricane Irma, and the outer rings also reaching near Montgomery, Alabama. The storm is huge, even though the strength of the storm has been reduced to a Category 2. We'll keep you up to date. Our next update from ABC coming up at the top of the hour. Back to you, Brian.
Thank you, Roger. Yes, a lot going on with that. And we're, you know, sorry we were a second late. But that's how it goes. All right, on the other side of the news, this is very exciting. On the other side of the news, we're going to talk to Jill Gage from the Newberry Library. They have a very interesting project going on right now, so we will talk to her about that. Did you see this article from this guy who writes for the Huffington Post, who wrote for the Huffington Post? And pretty much, now you were published in the Huffington Post, weren't you, Cody? Was that one of the ones you were published in?
Yeah, I was.
So, wow, you don't seem very excited.
It's embarrassing.
Why is it embarrassing?
Because they're embarrassing.
Because they take anything?
Yeah.
Pretty much?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And they don't pay most of their writers.
Ah.
Here's how it works.
But it's cited as such a credible news source.
They're crap. Here's how HuffPo works. I'll give you a little inside ball.
Please do.
They see that my I published a post about Bernie Sanders last January because I was a fan. I got 600,000 hits on my website, CodyGoff.com. Huffington Post contacts me and says, hey, wouldn't it be an honor if you were published in the Huffington Post? Wouldn't it be such a great thing for you if we published your content for free? Sold ads on it, made money from your content, and didn't pay you a dime? Okay. Now multiply that by about 50,000 writers who are just giving them free
right.
content that they can monetize, and that's the Huffington Post.
All right.
So they're crap, they're a crock, and most of their writing is hot garbage.
Yes, well, this is definitely hot garbage.
It's not journalism in any way.
No, it's a glorified blog post.
It's trash.
By a guy who is, or by people who are not really good blog posters. Sometimes we get good Florida news from there, but that's about it. That's what it's good for. Florida news, some naked news, a crazy study about, you know, this thing or that. So this got a lot of heat over the last few days on the internet and Twitter especially. This guy who moved to Chicago from San Francisco in January of 2014. So he's only been here a little over 3 years. Boo-hoo. And then he begins to whine. He's leaving Chicago. The headline, Goodbye, Chicago, What It's Like to Live in a City You Tried to But Couldn't Love. Oh, sorry. And he talks about how one time he fell off his bike because he hit the black ice on the S-curve. And another time he left because he nearly died when the driver of a Jeep gunned it out of a stop sign on Milwaukee Avenue and almost hit his bike, like every other biker who's ever driven up Milwaukee. So he was whining, and then he started to whine that he gained 40 pounds, and he goes on to bash. He said, well, this is not a hate letter to Chicago. And then he goes on and lists all the things he hates about Chicago, like the women. The women are all very standoffish. He couldn't meet a woman because after he got here, he went into a bar and ordered a Lagunitas. And he was like, oh, I was so excited that our quirky little West Coast brewery had made it here, and I wanted to reach through the computer screen and go, hey, jerk, they have a gigantic brewery at 17th and Western. It's ginormous. They've been here for a while. You know, it wasn't some little secret kept out in San Francisco. But he was angry about that because, it was $7 at the bar he went to instead of $4. And then he approached a table full of four women with his beer and was like, hey, I just moved from San Francisco. And they shut him down. And then he was very rude to them. And so he found it very hard to meet people. You've lived in the city a long time. He claims that it's too spread out, that you can't walk to areas with cool bars. You can't walk to grocery stores. The public transportation system is lacking, despite the fact that Chicagoans brag about everything in our city.
Was he talking about Chicago, Illinois?
I think so.
This is not the same city.
I think so. And now, granted, listen, we lambast a lot of things going on in this city that are wrong. But when he talks about, this is how he summed up, this city has world-class restaurants.
Yeah.
Right? I don't eat at them all the time. But they do have them. So this is what he said. He said that the food here, where is it? I should have, there is incredible food here, but you have to pay for it. You're running. Right. I don't know where he's. San Francisco is one of the highest rent cities and most expensive places in the country, San Francisco. But here you have to pay for your good food. Your baseline, run-of-the-mill baseline food can feel like it lacks any nuance. Yes, a hot dog is a hot dog, and a hamburger is a hamburger. The overriding sentiment around food culture seems to be, quote, the more the better. Putting cheese and bacon and an egg and poutine and fries and onion rings and barbecue sauce on everything is considered a culinary feat. Where does it? Okay. Maybe he went to Kuma's Corner, where they build their burgers with a lot of crazy stuff, and they're delicious. But they're not free. Sometimes the terms foodie cuisine and glorified carnival fare seem interchangeable. Putting corn chips into burger meat is a real thing. Where? Have you ever been to a place that had corn chips?
I don't know. And I don't even like bars, and I think this city has amazing bars.
Yes, and you can meet people. He also claims that Chicagoans all want to settle down. It's a suburban place.
Patently false.
Everybody wants to be in a relationship then move to the suburbs.
This is not reality at all.
This is a guy who. All right, we got a break. Then it'll be the news and another Irma update here on WGN. We welcome Jill Gage into the studio. Jill Gage I will say this, Jill, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
Jill is from the Newberry Library. She has what could possibly be the longest title of any guest I've ever introduced on this station. Your business card must be an 8x11 sheet of paper.
It's very big, yes.
Custodian of the John M. Wing Foundation on the history of printing and bibliographer for British literature and history. Is that correct?
Yes. I wish I could say they paid me by the letter, but they don't.
That's a shame. And you are with the Newberry Library, which if you are not familiar with the Newberry Library, it is a world-renowned independent research library right here in Chicago, and they have a very interesting new exhibit that is going to be opening up September 14th, which is called Religious Change and Print. Explain that.
So this is 2017 is the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's 95 Theses, so when he nails them up on the church door. So the exhibition is really about religious change in the period, so about the Protestant Reformation, but then also about how printing plays a role in the Reformation and how religion influences printing. So printing is not very old in 1517.
Right. And how did, and I know I'm asking you to, condense hundreds of years into, an answer, but how did printing influence religion?
Well, it really allows Martin Luther and other people to disseminate their ideas to the public. So before Gutenberg in 1450, it took one person 3 years to make one Bible.
Okay.
Martin Luther makes nearly 200 Bibles in 2 years. So once you were able to disseminate material really quickly and relatively inexpensively, a manuscript beforehand, before printing, was really expensive. So very few people could afford to have any kind of book, let alone a Bible, or to disseminate their ideas to the public, because you'd have to copy them all out by hand.
Right.
So once you have the printing press, you can create hundreds of copies of things relatively quickly, and they can be disseminated through normal informal channels along with travelers and merchants and all of that. So suddenly ideas in Germany could quickly find their way to England, for example, and then people could respond to those ideas in print just as quickly. So you got kind of, it was social media, definitely. It was sort of like Twitter. It was literally like Twitter wars of the 16th century. And then it happened it was a really disruptive technology, so it happened really quickly. And it was pretty much as down and dirty as Twitter wars are today.
Really?
Yeah.
So. In what sense? Between whom?
So my favorite one, I work on English books, so Martin Luther and Henry VIII in England did not get along at all. So in the time period, we think of Henry VIII as leaving the church, as leaving the Roman Catholic Church, right? He wants to get a divorce.
Right.
But for a long time, he was super into the Catholic Church.
Okay.
So Martin Luther starts saying the Catholic Church kind of sucks. Like, they make people pay to absolve themselves of their sins. They, you know, do have all kinds of bad practices. They tell people they're going to go to hell unless they do this and that. And really, that's not true. So he started writing all this stuff about the Catholic Church, and Henry VIII wrote all these pamphlets saying, "You're kind of a jerk, Martin Luther." It's kind of like we have a digital resource that's about the Luther controversy, and it's a little bit like Sock'em Robots of the 16th century.
Nice.
I wish we could sort of have like a little Martin Luther and Henry VIII kicking one another.
That would be hilarious.
Or something. So it's a lot of propaganda, right?
Okay.
So you're a jerk. No, wait, you're a jerk. At one point, Martin Luther thinks that Henry VIII is suddenly on his side and issues this pamphlet that said, "Oh, Henry VIII is not such a bad guy." And then Henry VIII is like, "Wait a minute, I didn't say that."
Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff. So it's really, so print does that, for religion.
And was there any correlation between the evolution of print and the explosion of religions? Did we see any growth? You mentioned the, you know, obviously Lutheranism and the Roman Catholic Church. Did they expand because of this? Is there a direct correlation?
Sure. Well, Protestantism and Lutheranism didn't exist before this. So, yes. But then even in America, so we have the first Bible printed in America, one of the earliest books printed in America is what we call the Eliot Bible. John Eliot, who was a Puritan missionary, had a Bible printed in an Indian language in Massachusetts because it was so important for Protestant missionaries to be able to have indigenous peoples read a Bible in their own language. So they even came up with an alphabetic language for Indians so they could read the Bible.
Wow.
So it really has to do with the spread of religion in America as well. So
this exhibition, which is Religious Change in Print, will be running September 14th through December 27th. You can get all the information at Newberry.org, the Newberry Library, of course, at 60 West Walton in Chicago. Part of this is, part of the literature that you've collected for this is manuscripts. So a lot of handwritten, a lot of handwritten things. And you've done something very, very interesting with this, trying to bring more people into the exhibit. You've crowdsourced this out to try and allowed people to translate some of these manuscripts. Why would that be necessary, other than the pure volumes of it that needs to be done? Were there different languages used? I mean, even within English language, even within English, were there different ones?
Yes, well, you know, there's like a scientific language, there's a language of religion, there's a language of magic. The manuscript you're probably talking about is our Book of Magical Charms, which is written in the early 17th century by three different people. So one thing is that the Newberry is open to the public, and so we wanted to try to extend that across the globe. So how do you use the Newberry if you don't live in Chicago and aren't, you know, you're not a scholar who wants to come here? So part of it is that, like just extending our mission online. We also wanted people to be able to tell us, we wanted to sort of crowdsource people's interests or people's knowledge, and we have learned a lot. So we didn't know too much about this manuscript, even though we've had it for a long time. But we've actually learned, so we've had people from many countries, including several people in England, and one who said, "I know who wrote that manuscript or who wrote most of it," he was a lawyer.
Okay.
And so that's the kind of thing that crowdsourcing like that can do. It can it can give you information that you never would have had, because that person in England who wrote to us never would have come to the Newbery to look at this manuscript.
Right.
But she recognized it as soon as she saw it online.
Well, let's talk about this manuscript and how magic kind of plays a role not only in religion, but it also kind of, it played a role, obviously, in medicine back in those days,
right.
You know, because we think of magic one way, but it was not always that way.
Right. So the magic, first of all, I think, too, one thing that I think is interesting is the Catholic Church is kind of, there are a lot of magical elements to it when you think about miracles or even, you know, blood into wine and body into,
yeah.
You know. There are lots of things where you have to sort of take that leap of belief, and I think that's a lot of what magic is. So the Catholic Church is, a lot of it is about smoke and mirrors, like literally like incense
oh,
and
sure.
this stuff like that. But a lot of what they thought of as magic was really practical advice. So how do you cure a toothache? And it turns out the way you cure a toothache, they thought, was you find a dead body and you take the tooth out and you wear it around your neck for 2 months, which would do something for you. I don't know what it would do. I mean,
drive people away, first of all.
It would drive people away. So how do you cure a stomach ache, or how do you ward off witches? And it's funny, the interesting thing is that these things are all thought of together, like how do you cure a toothache and how do you keep witches away from you is that's not something that I would put together.
Right, it's on the, they considered
yeah.
that on the same level?
Yeah, to a certain extent. So a lot of it is just how do you live your daily life? What do you need for your daily life? And it, if you're interested, the way that you keep a witch away is throw dog poo on her house.
Really?
It might anger a witch, but I don't know.
Yeah, unless there's something inherent in the poo that, you know,
maybe.
Can block a spell or something. I always thought, I would just light it on fire in a bag. I never actually
That's
threw it at the house.
That's the precursor. That was the 17th century ding dong ditch or something
That's right.
like that.
Yeah. See, I'm much more classy than
yeah.
a 17th century
That's right. That's
witch
right.
person. I'm going to light it on fire. So how did the magic book come to be part of this new exhibition?
Well, it actually came to the Newbery with a collection of books about science and medicine, which
okay.
is interesting. So the collector in the 1980s actually saw it as that. But we actually had... every person who works at the Newbery actually had to participate in selecting materials for this exhibition,
okay.
and we had what we call discovery teams, and we all picked stuff that we knew about that we just thought was interesting
okay.
and talked about it with our colleagues, and the curators and the people who were putting together the exhibition actually took a ton of notes and then picked out what they thought was most interesting about it.
Very nice. Well, I want to talk to you about the people who are responding to this, some of the people who are doing the translations, and we'll do that in just a minute. Jill Gage is my guest. She is from the Newbery Library. She is the custodian of the John M. Wing Foundation on the History of Printing and the bibliographer for British Literature and History. More with her after we go to the newsroom for an Irma update. But Roger is not at the news desk, so we will just... we're breaking now. We're breaking now, and then Roger's going to do it. All right, fine. Jill Gage is with me. She is the custodian. I love saying it, and that's, Joe, why I'm going to keep repeating it. She is the custodian of the John M. Wing Foundation on the History of Printing and the bibliographer for British Literature and History at the Newbery Museum. Newbery.org is the website. Their new exhibition called Religious Change and Print is happening September 14th through December 27th. You can get all the information at Newbery.org. We were talking about the crowdsourcing for this manuscript about magic, and you've put it out. Now, I was curious about what kind of people would want to translate a manuscript about magic. Who has been coming to you?
Well, a huge variety of people, and our digital initiatives department informs me that a lot of witches and warlocks have been very interested in this, including a woman in England who feels she can give us part of her winter. I don't know what she does during the summer months.
Okay. Well, that's probably a good time to be outside casting spells.
Exactly, yeah.
Communing with nature.
You don't need a sweater or anything like that, right? Yeah,
because, you know, need your big hat, whatever.
So there's that. There's sort of endless interest from that community, I think.
Forgive me if I sound uninformed. I didn't know that was going to be a very big community. Who would be itching to translate manuscripts?
Yeah, that seems like a really small Venn diagram.
Very niche.
But
or niche.
We, we have gotten them all, I think. You know, so they've been waiting for it. I mean, they've just been waiting for it, right? Like, if only. If
and it
only.
Was a game of post office where one learned of it and then they all, suddenly they all knew.
Exactly. They're, you know, well, because it's all like mind meld stuff, I imagine.
And so. Now, you said this manuscript was from England, correct? Mm-hmm. So it's in English, but it's all.
Some of it's in Latin.
Oh, some of it. Oh, all right.
Yeah, most of it's in English.
Okay.
So it's pretty easy to read. I don't know if you guys have, if Cody or you have looked at it. It's not that bad to read.
Okay.
And they're short chunks. So you can just take a little bit of a chunk and read it. And so all, every page has actually been translated. So the site has gotten nearly 200,000 hits.
Wow.
And every page has been at least partially translated by somebody. Sometimes it's high school students. Sometimes it's people in Argentina. Not that there are not high school students in Argentina. But
I don't know the educational system in Argentina.
So all kinds of people have translated it. People who just want to try to pick their way through 17th century English. You know, this was written exactly at the time of Shakespeare, too.
Oh,
so Shakespeare's the same. It's exactly the same period.
And do you check it for accuracy when they're done? How does that work? Because, you know, some of these witches or warlocks may be,
right,
you know, a little too much hemlock
stuff.
And things are just, who knows?
We are going to be checking it. And we're also going to have a space where we, so people have sent us a lot of information. Like they've done their, people have taken it upon themselves to do their own research. So we have to try to figure out what we think is right. You know, are we just going to put everything out there and let other people decide? So we'll be working on that, too.
And how big a team will go... does it take to go through all of this
That's
stuff?
A good question. There'll probably be like 3 or 4 people.
Okay.
But what's interesting is so when the exhibition opens next week, people can actually come and see it for themselves, too. So that's, I think, one of the exciting things.
Again, the community of witches and warlocks that wanted to get involved with this, and I know that's not the most important part of the exhibition. There's a lot of very interesting things, but that's going to pique some people's interest, mine, because it just seems so odd to me. And though, I guess the other thing that I'm curious about is. So they're translating the Shakespearean English, which is flowery and not how, and they're putting it into a more modern English so it's easier to read, or what happens with these translations? What's the point of translating English into English?
Well, this is actually a transcription as opposed to a translation. So the first thing you do is you literally transcribe word for word.
Okay.
So when it says doth, thou doth. Put a tooth, you write, thou doth put a tooth.
Okay.
And then what might happen is we might translate it or update it into modern English. That would be a possibility. So what, you know, thou doth put a tooth means you should put a tooth or you put a tooth.
Okay.
So that might be something that might be good to work with for like high school students
or guys like me who are fixated on warlocks.
Of course. So, you know, there are lots of things so what we'll do is we'll come up with some data and then maybe people can do what they want with the data. So if, you know, you want to do something, you know, you want to update it or somebody wants to translate it into French or whatever they want to do, you can do it.
Oh, very nice. And is this the only volume in the exhibition that is being transcribed by, being crowdsourced for transcription?
No, it's by far the most exciting thing. And we also have some Italian religious broadsides that are from religious ceremonies. So like literally posters that people would put up, like come to our church, like it's... you know, our Saints Day, and here's some poetry that we've commissioned for that. So those have not been translated. That's actually a translation project as well.
Okay.
So we want people to translate it from Italian into English.
Very nice. Well, it's all very fascinating, and you can be part of it. The Newbury Library is at 60 West Walton. If you go to newbury.org, you can get all the information on the new exhibition, Religious Change and Print, which opens September 14th, runs through December 27th at the Newbury Library. And again, my thanks to Jill Cage. Jill Gage, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I've got to do your title one more time because it's impressive. Custodian of the John M. Wing Foundation on the History of Printing and the Bibliographer for British Literature and History. Thank you again, Jill.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. We've got to do this, and then it'll be news time and another Irma update. And this time, Roger gets to do the whole report on WGN. We've got a text from somebody saying that their family is staying in Disney, another Disney text. Kids and grandkids are at the Floridian and the Contemporary, and Disney is treating them great. So that's good to know. It's a lot of people there, and that, you know, not to minimize the horrific nature of the hurricane for the residents of Florida. But if you've saved up, because if you've been to Disney, you know these are not cheap vacations. And if you saved up and this was your big chance to be in Disney and all of a sudden, bang, the hurricane comes, I'm glad to hear the reports that Disney is stepping up. Cody was not here last week. As you remember, Roger, we did all right. We muddled through.
Yeah, we got through it.
Yeah, we got through it. Casera was here. She was did a very nice job with us.
Yeah, yeoman's duty, as they say.
Yeah. So Cody was on a little trip with Dr. Cody's fiance.
Wait a minute. How do you mean trip?
He was on a trip. He was away from here.
Physical.
Did you label it? The reason I'm asking this, because I have in front of me a piece of paper. Did you label it anything, or was it just a trip for this guy? I know you were going to see Guns N' Roses in some gorge, some gully somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. Was this a special pre-marriage trip? That's why I'm asking.
No, I bought the tickets to this Guns N' Roses show last November, before I even knew when I was going to propose to my girlfriend.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Your fiancé.
Now my fiancé. Yeah, no, this is 3 months before I even popped the question.
All right, because this says couples are now taking early moons before their wedding. Instead of honeymoons, they're taking early moons. So you could label it now. Say, hey, baby, that was our early moon. And I don't think you ever would say to Dr. Mrs. Cody's fiancé's brother's sister, hey, baby, but you might.
Yeah, I actually think that the trip we took to Germany was our early moon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And we, in fact, have basically called it that.
Well, it's very nice.
We were in Germany at a castle, and we literally looked at each other after paying one of the bills and just said, so how about this is our honeymoon, right? And we were both kind of like, yeah, this is pretty much our honeymoon.
Yeah, that makes sense. So couples are doing this before they get married, to take a break before walking down the aisle. That's the early moon. It's not only rich and famous that are planning restful pre-wedding getaways, according to a wedding planner. There's been an uptick in that. So you guys are kind of in that. I have to ask you, because if you don't mind sharing some details, and you've never minded sharing any details on this before. So you went out to see Guns N' Roses, who you saw twice here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So you went out to this place because it's an outdoor amphitheater. Is it like Red Rocks? I've never been to Red Rocks, but I've seen pictures.
It's the Gorge Amphitheater in George, Washington. It's a couple hours.
George, Washington?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a gorge in George, Washington. You find the corpse of George Washington to watch a show.
Yeah, something like that.
All right.
It's basically on a desert plateau up above everything, because central Washington's pretty much desert.
Oh,
is
it really?
It's crazy. Once you get 20 minutes, half hour outside of Seattle, all these pine trees and Douglas firs, it literally just stops, and you feel like you're in eastern Colorado.
See, and yes, because Colorado is the same way.
Or western Colorado,
Eastern Colorado, because western Colorado is gorgeous.
Oh, right.
And then eastern Colorado is basically Nebraska adjacent.
Yes,
It's just the same topography as Nebraska.
Yes.
Snooze.
Weirdly desert-like, but the cool thing about it is, first of all, there's a camping area, so lots of people camping up there. And also, the stage, behind the stage, it overlooks this gorge that you're up above a river, and you can see down the river and everything. And it's supposedly, it's consistently ranked one of the most beautiful outdoor amphitheaters in the world.
Wow, it sounds gorgeous.
But about 50 miles outside of Seattle, everything that we saw was suddenly obscured by a slight haze.
Yeah, because it's on fire.
Because there's 200-something square miles of fire, and literally when we got to the amphitheater, you could still see, like, all those hills were kind of like silhouettes. It was like if somebody slapped a really cheap Instagram filter on our view. So it was still a nice view, but it was a little hazy. So that was a little disappointing, but probably a lot less disappointing than the people who have had to deal with the fires. I mean,
exactly.
I have perspective here.
No. I hate that we have to be so fragile about what we say. Of course we know that the people whose stuff is burning have it worse.
Yeah.
But it can still be disappointing to you who paid a lot of money to go out there to see this. You still have a right to be disappointed. That doesn't minimize other people's disappointment. Just like when I had to cover my bases when I said, the people who were vacationing at Disney, that's horrible for them. That doesn't mean that I don't know that everybody who may lose a home in Florida has it much worse.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, we have to be so careful about what you say so that you don't,
And for background, anyway. I booked the Gorge tickets because when Guns N' Roses announced initial tour dates last year, they had like 15 or 20 tour dates. Chicago is not one of them.
Oh.
So I looked at all these different places, and I said, okay, well, where will be cool? And then realized, wait, this place looks really sweet. So
yeah.
we just made a trip out of it.
Very nice. And you had to rent, because there's no, it's not in town. It's not like going to the First Midwest Bank Amphitheater where you could stay in Orland Park, and who wouldn't want to stay there, or Tinley, beautiful locales. But you have to kind of trek in. There's nothing there, so you rented an RV.
Rented a 1993 Winnebago through RVShare.com.
I didn't even know there were, I mean, I know about Airbnb and I know about those kind of things. I didn't know there was an RVShare.com.
It's like Airbnb for RVs.
And so you can put it. Now, had you ever driven an RV? Because I've often thought to myself that would be fun. We even went so far once to look at, you know, the pull behind trailers and things like that, but I've never driven an RV. And the more I look at it and the more I followed them, especially on the last road trip back from LA through the mountains and stuff, I was like, yeah, probably not. This may not be a good idea. Did you have any difficulties?
It was terrifying. Utterly terrifying. So much respect to all of our listeners who are truck drivers.
Yes, I would imagine.
I mean, really.
And yours probably was not, and correct me if I'm wrong, probably not one of those giant, like, tour bus size RVs. Yours was a smaller.
No, it was Winnebago. A tour bus size RV. It was gigantic.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I pictured yours as one of those with, like, the van front and the back.
No, it was.
Oh, yours was the big rectangle deal.
Yeah. 1993 wow. Winnebago Adventurer.
Wow.
It had a full bed in the back area.
Nice.
And, like, a kitchenette and a couch, a sleeper couch.
Sure.
Next to the little
booth. Was there the place to sleep above the driver or no?
No.
Oh, because that's the other kind of camper. Anyway. So now you get to, where are you flying to? Seattle?
Flew into Seattle.
Flying to Seattle. And then you say to yourself, all right, I've got these reservations. I got to go get my 93 Winnebago, which sounds unbelievably cool. A 93 Winnebago. A 24-year-old Winnebago. I'm sure it was in top-notch condition.
So actually, they had just rehabbed the insides, new cabinets and everything. That was great. However, driving it, so the guy that rented it to us, he gets in and he said, I'll show you around the corner, just drive around the neighborhood. And he turns at a stop sign and he says, when you turn, you have to turn really slowly because it's very top heavy.
Or it'll tip?
And it's old and it'll tip. So he takes this turn at about 15 miles an hour. So when we hit the highway, we would hit a slight curve left or right, and I'm slamming on the, not slamming, but I am pumping the brakes, going down to like 35 miles an hour for the slow curve. And eventually I got used to it. Because
could you feel it? Like, did it? Obviously, it feels different than driving a car, obviously, but could you feel that shift in weight?
Yes and no. I mean, yeah, I think it felt a little exaggerated, but it was funny. When we got to the actual campgrounds, there was a big line because they had just opened up the campgrounds.
Okay.
All these RVs lined up, and we lined up behind a 1994 Winnebago Adventurer.
Wow. So they were strutting because they were newer.
Yeah. Well, so the guy hops out, and he's talking to us, and he's like, oh, yeah, I usually take this 80 miles an hour, 75, 80 miles an hour. And I'm sitting there thinking, I was driving 45, and I thought we were all going to die.
Yeah. Does it feel faster? Or did you feel like you were going really slow?
I felt like we were going slow. Wow. But it felt like we weren't going to die. On the way back from the concert, we ended up going around 60. So I got used to it.
Yeah.
But, like, that adjustment period, the first time I got behind this wheel, I'm just like, we're going to die. This is a death trap. I feel like I'm driving the Titanic, and it's just as likely to totally capsize. Wow.
That's why, and it had the whole thing, and they told you how to use it, right? They didn't just say, here are the keys, good luck.
Oh, no.
Bring it back full.
It took us like a half hour, went through a checklist. They showed us the propane tank and the generator and the water and where to fill up the water and where to dump all the waste. And
you got to dump, pump out the toilet.
It's a whole world.
It is.
It really, the whole world of RV owning and driving, it's a whole other planet, and its own set of skills and codes and where you can camp and where you can park and etiquette. And, but fascinating. Very interesting. I'm glad I went on the trip.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would do another RV trip with a 24-year-old RV.
Yeah, I would imagine that's going to be a little harder to deal with than some of the newer RVs. And I another friend of mine just got back. He was in South Dakota, but he has a big pull-behind trailer, which I also think would be fun. But then just the thought of trying to back it into places and pull it along, I don't know. Maybe you get used to it. Like you said, you got used to it after a few days.
Yeah.
I would probably get used to it at some point.
Yeah, and I will say, I checked. You want to check your laws depending on what state you're in. But from what I read, most places you can drive one with a regular driver's license as long as you're not driving for commercial purposes.
Right.
In which case, you need a commercial driver's license.
You were not. You weren't hauling anybody. It wasn't a party bago that you were taking out to the gorge.
Now, that was Washington specifically, Washington State.
Okay.
So double check Illinois or the surrounding areas before you get on RV share. But I believe for the most part you don't need a seat.
Did you find it reasonable price wise to rent an RV on RV share?
I mean, for 3 nights, I'll be honest, it was $600.
Okay.
Which is steep, but you don't need a hotel.
Right.
And you've got a kitchen.
And you don't have to have a rental car.
You don't have to have a rental car. Yeah, because, right, rental car would have been a couple hundred.
And Dr. Mrs. Cody's fiance, she can just go to the bathroom while you're driving. You don't have to pull over.
Don't have to pull over as much. It was sort of shockingly fuel efficient.
Really?
Shockingly.
I just see it like...
Yeah, that's what I would think. Shockingly fuel efficient.
Well, that's good. Shockingly. All right, we've got to do this. Then it'll be time for another Irma update here on WGN. All right, we're going to head up to the newsroom in just a second, and we'll get another Hurricane Irma update, and then we'll come back, and Karen will be with us after the 8 o'clock news. That's how you are, right, Roger? We're going to go a little early to you. That way we don't miss a single word from ABC News, because, listen, we've been trying.
No, I understand.
And there's a lot going on and a lot of important information coming out of Florida, so we don't want to miss any of it. Want to make sure that we keep on top of everything that's happening. But I know ABC must... things must not be drastic, because they cut away from their big hurricane special Family Feuds on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
Oh. All right. Well, you got to play the feud, you know.
Yep. All right, it's all yours, Roger.
All right, so we're looking back behind Irma right now, Irma going through the Caribbean islands and Cuba. Cuba is still evaluating the damage done. They are not reporting any deaths from Hurricane Irma right now, but in the islands before Cuba in the Caribbean, they are reporting 22 people have died so far in the wake of Hurricane Irma.
Florida says it could have been much worse.
We do have flooding. You know, I know a couple of streets are definitely flooded, and, you know, there's going to be some damage, but nothing like 10 to 15 feet.
But Mayor Bill Barnett knows it's going to be a while before life is back to normal after Irma. ABC's T.J. Holmes is in Tampa, where the hurricane is now headed.
Tampa tested like never before. Its harbor almost like a giant funnel. Irma's winds sucking water from the coastline, leaving beaches of mud behind. This city hasn't seen a direct hit by a hurricane in almost a century.
Irma's first stop in Florida was the Keys. Monroe County Administrator Roman Gastesi.
What we're doing right now is we just sent crews out about an hour ago when it was safe to send them out, and they're assessing the situation and clearing the streets as best as possible.
Statewide, more than 3 million customers are without power. With continuing coverage, Hurricane Irma, Daria Albinger, ABC News.
I don't know if you've, Brian, if you've seen a couple of pictures of how parts of the shoreline along Florida where there's no water anymore.
Yeah.
Because it has sucked it out. And there was one picture that I saw, and I had to do a double take because I thought it was fake. But they had a picture of two manatees that were stuck in the mud of where there had been enough water to be swimming around in.
Well, that surge, that water will be back.
That's exactly
the thing. And I heard it. They described it this way on the Weather Channel earlier. If you fill the bathtub and then you lift it up one end,
mm-hmm.
all the water goes down there and you're dry. Well, then you tilt it back the other way and whoosh,
yeah.
That's where the storm surge comes from.
And so we see storm surges anywhere from a couple of feet up to about 15 feet in areas. So, again, just massive devastation, not just from the hurricane itself, but from the effects of the hurricane. So we'll have more coming up at the top of the hour.
And it's one of those things, as you travel more and you're in more places and things happen like this, it kind of affects you more. Now, most of us have been to Florida, at least some part of Florida at some point. And a couple of years ago, we went to Puerto Rico, which I found to be beautiful. It was so nice down in Puerto Rico. We had a wonderful time. And one of the days we went to a small island off the eastern coast of Puerto Rico, Culebra. That got horribly damaged the other day. And you just mentioned Puerto Rico sustained so much damage, and the U.S. Virgin Islands and the British Virgin Islands and Cuba. We've got all those. There's a huge big telethon on Tuesday to help out victims of all of these, all of this. So I hope if you can give some. I know we're being asked to give a lot lately because of all the disasters, and we have to keep, you know, we keep an eye on, of course, what's happening in the continental United States. And we brought this up earlier when the show first started. Think about the people in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Make sure we take care of them, and in Puerto Rico, which is a U.S. territory, as we all know, wonderful places. And places that we all, you know, we go if we can. We were in, you know, we were lucky enough to have gone to the Dominican Republic for our 25th anniversary a few months ago. And, you know, that didn't get hit as horribly as some other places, but everybody's taking a hit. It's good to hear now from ABC that things are not quite as bad as they were predicted to be. Not to minimize the damage, right, or the flooding and things that are going to come in the next day, but not quite the total devastation that some were predicting.
Right. There was a prediction that the hurricane could maintain Category 4 level devastation, right, winds and everything, but it has come down to a Category 2, winds of about 105 miles an hour sustained near the eye.
That still seems amazing,
yeah,
to me. I can't imagine. I mean, the windiest days here,
mm-hmm,
what do we get? Maybe 35?
35, 40
yeah,
at the most.
And that's we're all like, oh.
Right.
Now imagine three times that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any frame of reference for that.
There is none. I mean, we see the pictures of the guy,
sure,
standing out in the wind, but unless you were there,
nah,
you can't. And the other, you were talking about all the devastation that's been going on with Harvey and Irma and all of that here in the continental United States. Let's not forget the West Coast and the Northwest devastation by fires.
Fire. Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of acres
in the Northwest and
that
in California
have been destroyed by fires.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'd like to get a couple scientists,
mm-hmm,
to tell us what's going on, but, you know, you bring up climate, you bring up, and listen, this is hurricane season. There's always going to be hurricanes.
Sure.
Depending on who you want to believe, have hurricanes gotten stronger? I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. I believe things are changing. I believe we are responsible for some of those changes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, you can disagree if you want, but I don't care. That's, you're not going to change my mind,
yeah,
with all your
everyone's got, I guess,
fake
their
news
own opinion. Sure.
You know, you come to me with your fake news. I know it's not fake news, but people want to deny it. That's all right. But yeah, we've got fires on the West Coast, which are horrible. We've got the hurricanes and the flooding in the South and the Southeast and in the Caribbean. Just, it's scary. It's,
yeah,
all the things that are happening. And then, you know, when you have relatives in an area, now, you know, there was talk, some of the spaghetti models had Irma kind of whipping off to the west, going
the Coast
into the
Guard
Gulf.
Had assets.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
That was me.
I like to hear about the Coast Guard whenever I can. you know, going off, it was two of the spaghetti models shot it off into the Gulf and had it going toward New Orleans.
Oh,
now,
okay, right,
you know,
right,
New Orleans has had enough, but then now I have a real personal worry about that because Molly's down there.
Right.
So, you know, we all have people that we worry about, and it's rough. It's
yeah.
Rough. I have a very interesting study, but we're going to have to save this till next week because I will give you a hint. Yeah. That music,
yeah,
is going to do something. And now there's science behind what that music is going to do. So, but unfortunately, we don't have time because we've got to go.
You're such a tease.
I am. Well, listen, that's what I do. That's that's the whole dealio for me. I like to get people all. Oh man, let's see how effective a week long tease is. Cody, what are the odds on people who just heard that tease going, oh my God, I have to be back here next Sunday? I'm going to say pretty good.
84%.
I would imagine that's low, but I'll give it to you. I was going to say 87.
Minimum.
A minimum of 84%.
Yeah.
That's the kind of tease they don't teach you at broadcast school. In Columbia, they're not teaching you the week-long tease.
Mm.
I go with the long tease, like the long con.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do. I don't go short con. I go long con. Long con, long tees. Not to be confused with Rokon, who's on every day from 3 to 7.
Right.
Monday through Friday with Anna DeVlantes. All right, let's do this. Then there's more WGN. Karen Conti is here, and yes, she's back. The band is back together. Cody's back. Karen's back. Everybody's back. Did you have a wonderful trip?
I had a wonderful trip to San Miguel de Allende, Mexico.
Ooh. And that is not a beach town, you were saying.
No, it's an old city, the colonial city, smack dab in the middle of the country. It's a lot of expats there, but it's a very local place, and so it's not a place on the beach, and it's not a place that tourists go because it's almost impossible to get there.
Would you get choppered in? How does that work?
You know, plus with Houston, you know, we had to be redirected. I think getting there was about 18 hours altogether.
Oh.
So, but a beautiful city, very inexpensive to be there, and a lot of sophisticated arts and food and wine, and it was just fabulous.
Let me ask you this, and I ask everybody who travels abroad lately, because we were abroad during the campaign. Now that the election has happened and things are going on, does it come up when you're in another country, you know, about the government here?
Yes. You know what I find? They had these T-shirts all over that said, you know, welcome to the happy side of the wall.
Okay.
So you could see that they were sort of making fun of it. The people there were so nice, and it was so interesting because they would talk to us about it, but they'd sort of infer that we didn't vote for him, that no one knows how he got elected. Like, I mean, they presumed that we didn't vote for him because they couldn't imagine anyone, you know, nice voting for him. That's kind of how they acted. Maybe I voted for him or I didn't. But if I did, you know, why are you presuming that I didn't? But they almost...
Well, maybe they also presume that if you voted for the president, then maybe you support some of his things and you wouldn't
and
go
you
to
wouldn't
Mexico.
And you wouldn't be there. I suppose that's part of it.
Maybe.
But they, you know, they don't understand it. You know, they're very happy people. You know, in this town, they're just lovely people and they love Americans. And I did not feel any bad or harsh feelings toward us as a result. They're largely unaffected by it, I think, in that town.
Yeah, because as you said, it's in the center of the country, so probably the... You know, why would they worry about the border stuff? Because they're nowhere near the border.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
Great
Welcome
time.
Back.
Yes.
I got to say, I dispensed a lot of really bad legal advice last week.
Malpractice insurance covers you.
Well, no, I told them that, you know, they were taking it at their own risk. But I gave out your number. So if you get a lot of calls in the next few weeks going, hey, that week you weren't there, things got a little, it'll be fine. A lot of things to talk about. But let's talk since we've been covering Irma a lot tonight, obviously, and we will continue to cover Irma throughout the evening. When a disaster hits, we hear a lot about fraud. We hear a lot about things afterwards. What kind of legal problems follow a disaster? I'm sure people are starting to experience that in Texas now and the big earthquake in Mexico and everywhere else. Things happen that are unsafe.
You know, it's the first thing is that, you know, food and shelter, right? And then the second thing is legal.
Yeah.
Because the legal affects all of these things. Coverage on insurance. Does it cover a flood? If it doesn't cover the flood, does it cover the mold? Does it cover the personal property? What happens if your car gets carried away? Does your car insurance cover that? Does your flood insurance cover that? What happens when you enter into a construction contract with a fraud? How do you apply for FEMA benefits? How about employment? If people can't get to their jobs, are the employers allowed to fire them because they can't get to their jobs? Can you apply for unemployment if you can't make it back to your job? Even things as simple as your documentation. Where is your will? Where is your life insurance policy? That might be completely destroyed, and you're trying to get those documents back. People who live on Social Security, where are the checks being mailed? How do you change that change of address?
Wow.
I mean, and then school. That's a whole other thing. Like, if kids can't go to school, at what point in time are they going to forgive that and allow them to go back to school and make up the time in some other way? So, there's so many issues like that. And I suppose a really important one is mortgage. What do you do if you don't have flood insurance and you lose your house, it's completely destroyed, and you have a mortgage that you're paying on a non-existent home.
I've seen a lot of things like that, but coming out of Texas, obviously,
yes.
And now they're going to start coming out of Florida too. So what can you? You're still responsible, correct?
You're still responsible. Now, the federal government usually issues guidelines where they say, we expect the banks will work with the lenders and either forgive some of the money that is owed or at least restructure loans or help them get on their feet or maybe have a deferred sort of program. But the banks really aren't obligated to follow those guidelines.
Right.
So it's really a case-by-case basis where you're going to work something out with the bank. And for that, some people could use a lawyer for that. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do.
No, I can't. That would be harder, I think, than trying to restructure if you're, you know, if you're still in your home and it's still inhabitable and you're having trouble making the payments. If you don't have, suddenly you don't have that property that you're paying on,
and
if insurance can't rebuild it, yeah.
And then you still have to live somewhere else and pay rent somewhere else,
yeah.
You know, not to mention recoup all your belongings at some point. And so, you know, I see a lot of good lawyer groups are doing great things. They're going down there and they're setting up legal aid clinics for free. I really like when I see lawyers do that. We get such a bad name sometimes.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that lawyers, you know, there's a phrase that I rings in my head, and that is that the people who need legal help the most can afford it the least. And when it comes to this kind of thing, this is exactly the case where lawyers need to step up and try to give as much advice as they can.
Yeah, because just the list you brought up, some of the things I would have thought of, and then others, it's like, oh, yeah, what if, you know,
right.
And I understand if you're a boss, you need your people at work, but if your people don't have a home anymore and they've got nowhere to live, you know, how you have to run your business, but these people have to have at least
it's a chain reaction.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
People were talking about eviction, that landlords are going to evict these people because they're not paying their rent. Well, that sounds really heartless, but the landlord's paying mortgage on a property that may not even be there anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you have this chain reaction of things that all result in just financial disaster for people.
Yeah, and it's hard to say, well, listen, just put everything on hold and we'll start up again in another couple months.
Right.
Because you don't know how long it's going to take for any of that. And if your house is gone, your house is gone. There's nothing you can do.
You know, and then again, the final issue, I suppose, is bankruptcy. And there's going to be a lot of bankruptcy because they're going to just throw their hat in and say, I need to start all over again, and I can't afford to pay what I owe.
Right. And that's kind of what bankruptcy is for in a situation like this where at some point you can't blame them, because I know from talking to friends of mine with property down there, the flood insurance thing is very tricky.
Yes.
Because sometimes they'll tell you, well, you're not really in a floodplain, so you don't need it necessarily. And then all of a sudden you see something coming. And it's like private is so much money. It takes X amount of time, and applying through FEMA takes a shorter amount of time. But if warnings are issued while you're waiting to get your FEMA insurance, that's negated. It's unbelievable.
I'm sure there's a whole cottage industry of attorneys down there who know how to navigate the system.
Yeah.
And probably charging people money to do it.
I would imagine.
You know.
And at some point, you can't blame them either. Real quick, because we do have to take the breaks for Irma, but I have a text question that maybe you can answer in the next couple minutes. Last week, I was grocery shopping at a big chain store. I had just checked out when I heard the cashiers yelling, "Stop, sir, stop." An apparent shoplifter was making a beeline for the door. I thought about detaining him, but wasn't sure if I had the right since I didn't see him steal. He had a duffel bag and ran off. The store doesn't get physical, but I went home feeling like a wimp for not tackling him. Do I have the right to detain a shoplifter like that? The police said he's a known thief and does this all the time.
Wow, you know, kind of the citizen's arrest question, right? There's, you know, do you have a legal right to tackle somebody when they're stealing property of another person? I would say probably not, because you're not in a position where that's your duty, and you're not defending yourself. You're not even defending your own property. You're defending somebody else's property.
And you're inserting yourself into something that really not your
business. Now, you know, would someone prosecute you for it? Hardly think so. But interestingly, you know, if you actually did that, could you be liable for damages or injuries? Of course, people can sue for anything they want. I think in the long run, you're probably making a better decision not to insert yourself, as much as it's nice that our texter there felt an obligation to help out, and that's nice. But when you involve yourself in that, you never know what you're getting. I mean, I've had that happen too, where I've seen shoplifting, and should I report it? Should I tell people? You know, you never know who's got a gun these days.
Exactly.
Because you can have a gun, and it doesn't take much to get one. So, I wonder, is that going to put us all at risk when I have a person running the cash register who's probably making minimum wage and doesn't want to, you know, tackle him either?
Involved.
So, you know, it's a hard decision, and probably was the right decision for your texter.
And you're right. it's the right to, I agree with you that it was probably the right decision, but there's also that party that goes, that I should be able to stop something that's wrong, but sometimes it's better to just, in this day and age, unfortunately, to say, yeah, just turn your back and mind your own business.
Right. I mean, the law basically is a sliding scale as to, you know, what you have. If someone's hurting you or hurting your family member physically, pretty high, you know, burden there. You can do it. So.
All right. More with Karen. If you have a legal question, 312-981-7200. We're going to do this, and we'll get an Irma update on WGN.
All of us. Online. WGNRadio.com. I'll bet you know someone who's getting older and wants to stay in their home, and I'll bet you're concerned about their safety. One in three Americans over the age of 65 will fall this year, you know. I'm John Williams. I'd like to introduce you to Remodel Direct. They specialize in making homes safer and more comfortable. Remodel Direct is a Chicago company. They serve all of Chicagoland, and they are certified living-in-place specialists. You know, they walk through my parents' home with me, my mom and dad. It's amazing what a set of fresh eyes can see. My mom was using a step stool in the kitchen. Now easy pull-down shelves make that easier and safer. We talked about walk-in tubs, tub-to-shower conversions, safety grab bars, and stair lifts. You're going to love their factory direct pricing. Remodel Direct. Your home, your independence, their passion. They do one thing. They specialize in making homes safer and more comfortable to age in. Call 888-70-DIRECT. 888-70-DIRECT. That's 888-70-DIRECT.
If you or someone you know is blind from retinitis pigmentosa, there may now be light at the end of the tunnel. Known as the Second Sight Argus II Retinal Prosthesis System, this is the only FDA-approved treatment for end-stage retinitis pigmentosa. Find out more by calling 800-499-7620. Call 800-499-7620 to learn more about an FDA-approved system that provides some artificial vision for those blinded by retinitis pigmentosa. Once again, the number to call is 800-499-7620. Call now. Argus II is indicated for patients who are completely blind due to retinitis pigmentosa. Possible side effects that may require further treatment include wound reopening, low eye pressure, serious infection in the eye, and retinal detachment. For more information, including all potential risks associated with the device and procedure, call 800-499-7620. That's 800-499-7620, or visit our website at info.secondsight.com.
Do you struggle getting deep, restful sleep? Think about it. When was the last time you replaced your pillow? Well, your tossing and turning may be the result of that flat, worn-out pillow you've been sleeping on for years. Get a new one. Come on. Try a MyPillow and join the millions of people who are getting the best sleep of their lives. You can try one out absolutely risk-free. That's right. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-299-9579. MyPillow is offering their signature four-pack special at 50% off. Just use the promo code WGN at checkout, and they'll even throw in free shipping. And on top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident you'll love that your new MyPillow that they're going to give you a 60-night money-back guarantee. That is a good deal. Sleep on it. If you don't believe it's the absolute best pillow out there, return it for a full refund. Try a MyPillow. See why customers have described them as life-changing. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com and use the promo code WGN. Play ball. Celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. All right, let's head up to the newsroom and get another Irma update. Here's a Roger.
And, of course, we've been talking about how Irma has made landfall on the continental United States, but we seem to forget that it tore through Caribbean islands already. We mentioned some time ago that we had a report of 22 people had been reported killed by the hurricane in the Caribbean islands. That's now been up to 27, and we're now getting reports that three people in Florida have been reported killed as a result of the hurricane. So 30 people so far that we know of. Cuba is still searching through the debris on that island. They have not reported any deaths. Here's our latest update.
Category 2 storm, winds up to 105 miles an hour, heading for Tampa. ABC's Alex Stone is there.
Even though Irma is weakening, it's still a very strong storm. The wind here blowing the rain sideways. The streets are absolutely empty here right now. There is a curfew in effect. Nobody should be out. It doesn't appear anybody is out.
The death toll here in the U.S. from Irma is 3 so far. Officials do expect that number to rise, but ABC News chief meteorologist Ginger Z says many took evacuation orders seriously, and that appears to have saved lives.
When you don't have people outdoors and you don't have people right at the waterside where the worst of these impacts will be seen and felt, I felt great seeing, and everybody got their water, so they're ready for no electricity for the next couple of days, perhaps no water.
Nearly 3.5 million customers statewide are without electricity, President Trump declaring most of Florida a federal disaster area. With continuing coverage, Hurricane Irma, Daria Albinger, ABC News.
And we'll have our next update coming up at the 8:30 news. Roger Badish, WGN Newsroom, and back to Brian.
Thank you, Roger. Karen Conti is here, 312-981-7200. That's the number to get your legal questions answered. Karen is back from vacation. She is rested and ready to dispense legal wisdom, so avail yourself of that legal wisdom. Supreme Court is going to hear a case. The president, while he was on the campaign trail and for years has been talking about his support for the LGBT community, and now there's a case that's coming to the Supreme Court, and we've heard cases like this before, so I'm wondering why this is different. But basically, there's a baker in Lakewood, California. He says he did not want to make a cake for a gay couple because it was against his religious beliefs. And we've heard these arguments. And the Justice Department is saying this case, which is known as Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission, turns on the analysis of the First Amendment and the cake maker's rights prevail because, according to accommodations laws that bar discrimination by many businesses in Colorado and elsewhere, they, like other laws, must yield to the individual freedoms that the First Amendment guarantees. That includes the freedom not to create expression for ceremonies that violates one's religious beliefs, end quote. So out of all the cases, there was a pizza place in Indiana. Right. We've heard tons of these. How does this one make it to the Supreme Court?
You know, I'm not sure exactly why this one did make it to the Supreme Court, but it's interesting because a lot of people say, you know, I really think people should be able to serve who they want and do what they want if it legitimately interferes with their beliefs. But the point that we need to make here is that we already decided these kind of cases. Mm-hmm. This is the lunch counter cases. You know,
right.
I don't like the fact my religious beliefs say that African Americans and white people should be able to share a lunch counter or whatever. Or, you know, I think my religious beliefs say that handicapped people should not be in the same place. There's religious beliefs that do say that.
Sure.
Okay? But we have decided that the rights of people to public accommodations trumps, not to use that word loosely, trumps the issue of whether or not I can exercise my First Amendment right. Because you could always make something into a religious belief. Our trains, you know, our hotels, our restaurants, these are deemed to be public places where people have rights to be served in a non-discriminatory way. The question here, however, is does the sexual preference of somebody rise to the level of the same as gender, race, religion, etc.?
Okay.
If this were a religious issue, you know, I'm not going to serve a Jewish person and make a cake for them because I don't believe in the
right.
Jewish faith or something, that would probably
be a clearer
answer. But because the federal government has not definitely recognized that gay couples have the same rights as people of different religions, etc., this is a test case. But you have to remember, several years ago, our Supreme Court said that gay marriage, we have to have the right to gay marriage.
Right.
So if you apply that reasoning to this kind of case, I think the Supreme Court has to come down and say that was discrimination.
Okay. And, you know, you get arguments then from people saying, well, doesn't a business owner have the right to refuse service to anyone? You know, we see those signs all the time.
Not based upon the prohibited categories like race, gender, age, etc. In fact, most states, including Illinois, has a law that goes beyond the constitutional rights, meaning we cannot discriminate against people based upon gender identity, based upon gender preference, and things like it, or military service. I mean, there's a list of those prohibited classes where you cannot discriminate against them. Can I discriminate against you if you're wearing a nose ring and you have pink hair? Yes, but can I discriminate against you because you're wearing a hijab? No. So okay. Those are the laws that we have in place, and Colorado has a similar law, and I think that those laws are perfectly legitimate. And again, not serving somebody and then versus the idea that we are going to not let you go to church and exercise your First Amendment rights. That's a stretch to me.
Okay, and this is what the Solicitor General wrote in the filing, and maybe you can clarify, explain it. Quote, the government may not enact content-based laws commanding a speaker to engage in protected expression. An artist cannot be forced to paint, a musician cannot be forced to play, and a poet cannot be forced to write, end quote. So he's equating someone who makes a cake with this. Can you explain his, obviously you can't explain his thinking, but can you kind of put it in a perspective that we would understand?
I think he has to spin it that way, because otherwise you're talking about, okay, so if I prepare your eggs Benedict in the morning, am I an artist?
Right.
Does that mean that if I do it for a Muslim person and I don't believe that I should be serving Muslim people in this country, is that my creation of Eggs Benedict, does that make something, is that offending my First Amendment? That's a real slippery slope.
Okay.
I don't think that's a good argument. I think that we have public accommodations, we have people, we have stores, and the stores are licensed, and, you know, they're open to the public, and you cannot discriminate against people based upon these things. Even if you think that sexual orientation is, you can discriminate, it's really gender discrimination.
Yeah.
You know, there's two men who want to get married. You're discriminating against, if that person were a woman, if one of them were a woman, you would be making the cake. Because you're discriminating against somebody because of their gender, that goes back to time immemorial. We don't discriminate against women or men.
Okay. Somebody texted in, what if that person's business is a church? So if I'm pastor of a church, can I say, is it okay to not marry somebody in my church?
Yes.
Would that be?
So, yes, okay.
That's a straight up
religious issue,
thing.
And certainly you are not required to sanctify something that the religion does not believe in.
Okay.
And churches are not public facilities. They're not a restaurant or a train station or a hotel.
Yeah, because while they theoretically would be open to anyone, they're open for the people who choose to, follow that religion.
That's correct.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a break in a minute, but tell people how they can get a hold of you during the week in case they are slothful tonight.
You can give me a call at 312-332-7800, or better yet, give me a little background in an email, kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
All right, let's do this, and it's news time on WGN. They say, oh, it's the storm's been downgraded to a Category 2, so the winds are only 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Only 100 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
Unbelievable.
Hard to imagine. You know, the funny thing, too, Brian, I was thinking about so many people say to us, like, Chicago, you have the worst weather. How do you stand living there? And I say to myself, at least we don't have, like, in Chicago proper, mm-hmm. we don't have tornadoes. I mean, in Plainfield,
oh,
yes,
sure.
Okay. We don't have hurricanes, we don't have tsunamis, and we don't have earthquakes, really, in Chicago. So for the most part, we have cold weather, but that's about as bad as it gets.
Right, and it was like when we lived in Florida, and you have earthquakes
yeah.
and fires, and you know, every place has their thing.
That's right.
You know, and you just, if you live there, you get used to it as you can, because I've been here my whole life. I still am not used to, you know, 30 below zero.
I'm not,
but I can deal with
but
it.
But I can't get used to having a house and having it destroyed and then building it again and losing it again.
No.
That I would have really, I would just have a hard time with that.
That would be everything. It would break your spirit,
yes.
I would think, at some point. So the people who do it, kudos to them.
I agree.
I don't think I could. 312-981-7200. That's how you avail yourself of Karen's legal advice. Betsy wants to do just that. She is in Aurora. Hi, Betsy.
Oh, yes. Hi, it's Becky.
Oh, Becky, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Cody doesn't know how to type. Blame everything on Cody.
I have a question regarding labor laws, and if there's any that would protect a person from losing their health insurance while they're off on a medical leave and not able to work to keep their hours at a full-time amount.
Yeah, this is a little complicated, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to give you a definitive answer because this is not my area, and also I think I would need to know a little bit more. But generally speaking, an employer can fire you if you're off on medical leave. People don't think that's the case. If you are on FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act, which means you are disabled and you're taking off time to tend to an illness for yourself or a family member, they can't take you off the insurance, and they should not fire you for that because you're taking a medically that's a federally mandated leave that you're able to. Then they have to accommodate you when you come back and give you a similar job back. So that's one thing that protects you. The Affordable Care Act itself provides some protection in the case that the insurance company can't drop you if you've developed a disability. It's sort of like pre-existing condition. But if you're on leave because you have a medical issue, your employer can fire you and necessarily terminate your health insurance. So one of the things that you should look at is, you know, the COBRA policy, which is expensive, but at least it bridges you to the point where you're not going to lose, and be uninsured a certain period of time. I'm sure I'm missing some things here because this is not my area of expertise. And if you'd like to consult a labor expert, you can send me an email and I can give you a person's email address who might be able to help you.
What would that email address be?
It's kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right.
Is that K with a K or?
Yes, K, okay. Conti, KConti, at KContiLaw.com.
Okay, thanks for taking
good
my
luck.
Call.
Good luck,
sure, Becky. Good luck. We've got a couple text questions. Let's see. We've been talking a lot about, or we talked earlier about foreclosure, if your house is destroyed in a flood or something like that. From the 847, can my house be foreclosed if I'm behind several months, but I'm still making partial payments? Can they foreclose my house while I'm trying to sell it?
Yes, they can. Just because you're making partial payments, you're not meeting up to your contract obligation to pay the full mortgage. Some companies will work with you. I think the best thing that you are doing right now is selling your house, because so many people just let it go into foreclosure, continue to live there, and don't try to sell it. Because when you sell it, at least hopefully your mortgage will be paid off by the new person buying it, and then maybe you'll even get some equity out of it. So, but I think that one of the things that you might want to do is to consult with the lawyer who deals with foreclosure, because perhaps the lawyer can make a call to the lender and say, listen, this person is going to sell the house. There's going to be enough money to pay off the loan. Everything's going to be okay. Just hold tight. Don't incur any more attorney's fees. Let this house be sold and let everyone be made whole. And hopefully that will work. You know, the banks are big companies. They don't, you know, they're hard to reach. They're hard they can't make decisions without consensus. So sometimes the average person making calls just can't get through, and sometimes lawyers who practice in this area know the people to call to get the answer.
Yeah, because you talk to one person, you get one answer, and then you talk the next day, you call back, you're not getting that same person, you're getting different answers. And as you said, there's attorneys that specialize in this, so that's their deal.
Exactly.
We've talked a lot about Illinois being a right-to-work state, that you can be fired for any reason. Your employer doesn't, as long as it's not a discriminatory reason. But this question is interesting. I want to see what you say about this. I'm an African-American male. I'm also a waiter at a high-end restaurant where The high-end restaurant where I'm employed, I refuse to serve a white male with a swastika tattoo. The restaurant I was working for suspended me for insubordination. I'm going to quit and not return. Do I have grounds for a lawsuit?
Ooh, that's an interesting question.
That's what I thought.
That's an interesting question. My gut legal feeling is that the employer was able to do that. That was within his parameter.
To suspend you.
Yes, because a person, you know, the restaurant probably could have turned that person away, perhaps, but perhaps not, because what we're talking about is discrimination based upon beliefs. I don't know that it rises to the level of race, gender, sexual orientation, or any of the other prohibited categories. I don't know that being a Nazi or being a white supremacist is a protected category. So
I was going to say, because if you're a restaurant manager and you know that this person's tattoo. If it's it must have been visible. The gentleman who's texting us said it was visible. That symbol is going to upset, I'm going to guess, a majority of your customers.
Right.
So
that's not a protected class either.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just because you want to express yourself, you know, or wearing an obscene T-shirt, let's say.
Sure.
Right? You can be turned away from a Gibson's because you're wearing an obscene T-shirt.
No, you're telling me.
You know, or something that's, you know, that's offensive. So I think the restaurant had a right to turn this, could have turned this guy away.
And,
but I also think that, that there's a right to fire a person who is insubordinate because your personal beliefs in the workplace really don't really matter that much. They really don't. I mean, if you're working for a government agency and you want to express yourself, that's a different thing because that's a federal right to express yourself. And if a government is telling you you can't do something, that's First Amendment. But a private employer, if I'm an employer and I've got attorneys working for me, and if someone were to come up and say, I'm not going to go to court for somebody because I don't like the way they look or I don't like the fact that they're Jewish or whatever.
Yeah.
I would fire that person right away because
this person was just suspended. He was not fired. He's decided on his own to not go back to work there.
Right. Yes. But it's interesting. If he were fired, would that have been an appropriate firing? And I think it would have been. Just because private, you know, going back to cake baking thing, I know that sounds like I'm double talking, but this is not a protected class.
Right.
So the right to, there's no right to be served because you have a swastika on your forehead.
So the customer could have been sent away without any, and the restaurant wouldn't have legally had any problems.
I believe that's the case.
The restaurant was within the right to suspend this guy, and since he's not going back, he has no legal recourse.
That's right.
He's made the decision not to serve the person, and now he's made the decision not to go back to the restaurant.
That's right.
All right. So, but
interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, and he sent a follow-up text thanking us for reading the question. So there you go. What's the difference between family leave and medical leave?
Well, Family Medical Leave Act is provided by federal law, and that basically, I don't have it in front of me, but basically it says that if you have someone who's ill in your family or you're ill or you're pregnant, you know, mm-hmm. and you're having a baby, you can take off a certain amount of weeks and they have to reserve your job for you or a job that's similar.
Okay.
And it's a certain number of weeks and it's limited, and you have to qualify for it. You have to apply for it with your employer. But medical leave is just, you know, medical leave means a bunch of different things to different employers. Some employers call medical leave, hey, listen, I'm going to take off 3 months to take care of my cancer, and, you know, you don't have to pay me. And that's their medical leave policy that you can take off and you can come back and apply for a job, perhaps.
Okay.
But it doesn't have a real legal meaning, medical leave. It really matters what the employer calls it and what's in the policy handbook.
Okay. This week seemed to be besides the president, and DACA and all of that, there hasn't been a lot of big local story.
No.
Except for the guy who killed the Northern Illinois student. He's been on death row for 10 years, and the judge told him he was whining because he was demanding a new trial because he was saying there was problems with his original defense. And the judge just came out and said, well, stop whining. That seemed a little abrupt for a judge, but I also liked it.
Yeah.
Because we all get tired of hearing convicts complain.
That's true. And the defense of ineffective assistance of counsel, which I think is what he termed this, is really, I mean, people think that you have a right to a brilliant lawyer. Well, you really don't. You have a right to a lawyer who does a decent job.
Okay.
There have been lawyers who fall asleep during death penalty cases, and the courts,
I don't mean to laugh, but
the courts have said, you know, stop whining, and that's effective, you know.
Yeah.
Or lawyers who haven't prepared, they have declined to give a closing argument because they say, you know, find him not guilty, and that's all they say.
That's it.
That is effective according to the Supreme Court. It's a very high standard.
All right, more with Karen and a story related to the text we just read. We'll do this, then an Irma update on WGN. All right, we will head back to the newsroom and get an update on Irma in just a few seconds. 312-981-7200 if you want to get a question in for Karen Conti. Do it quickly because we are running out of time. We've got a lot to do tonight, and time is always the tyrant. But right now, let's head back up to the newsroom where Roger Badish is breathlessly standing by to talk for a few seconds before ABC News.
And right now we're taking a look at the watches and warning areas in Florida being caused by Hurricane Irma. And actually, the majority of these right now are on the East Coast, near Melbourne and up near Orlando. These warnings, tornado warnings, severe thunderstorms, flash flood warnings throughout that area as Irma continues to make its way up the western coast of Florida.
We're hearing a lot of that in Florida as Hurricane Irma moves through the state. Transformers exploding and the wind and the rain knocking out power to millions, at least 3.5 million customers so far. The storm, now Category 2, winds up to 105 miles an hour. Heading for Tampa, ABC's Alex Stone is there, and like many, he's hunkered down.
The winds have gotten to a point now where emergency responders in some areas are stopping their responses, so even if somebody calls 911 for help, they won't be coming for now. It's just too dangerous. We did, though, see a fire engine going by with its lights flashing. So every once in a while, they do seem to go out if there's any kind of break in the storm as the storm continues to move north.
President Trump declaring much of Florida a federal disaster area that will allow counties to tap into millions in funding and equipment. With continuing coverage, Hurricane Irma. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
And want to remind everyone that you can go to our website, WGNradio.com. There is a link at the top of the page. You can get it either on the WGN app or on the website through laptop computers, regular computers. The link will take you to an interactive map showing the exact location of Hurricane Irma and all of the related information around it, where it's tracking to and the areas affected by it. So we encourage you to keep up to date by going to our website, WGNradio.com. Brian, back to you.
Thank you, Roger. Karen Conti is here with me. She's answering your legal questions, 312-981-7200. Before we went to Irma, we read a text from a gentleman who was a server at a high-end restaurant. He claimed, he said he was African-American, didn't want to serve a customer who had a swastika tattoo. His boss suspended him for insubordination, and then he was asking if he had any legal recourse, which Karen says he did not. But Kevin wants to weigh in on something that kind of related to that story. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I'm a chiropractor, and I had a patient who had been in our practice for quite a while, and she got pregnant and decided to have an abortion. And my receptionist is extremely anti-abortion, says it's against her religion and everything, and she refused to serve this patient of ours anymore. She wouldn't take her appointments. She wouldn't walk her back to the room. She wouldn't take her payment. And so I warned her several times that she needed to do this, and she wouldn't do it. So I fired her for insubordination. She took me to court saying that I fired her on the basis of religious discrimination, since abortion is against her religion, and the judge sided with me that I could, in fact, fire her for insubordination.
Okay. Oh, sorry, Karen.
Yeah, that's the exact correct result. Interesting that, you know, that it went that far. I'm actually surprised it went that far. But certainly she can have her beliefs, but she has to do her job, and she can't discriminate herself against people because they've exerted their rights. And under our current state of the law, abortion is legal, whether you like it or not, from a religious mm-hmm. standpoint. She was legally able to do that, and you have a business to run, and you can make sure that your patients are all getting fair treatment, and that was the right result. You know, it's amazing to me. I have strong beliefs, and I'm sure listeners are out there thinking they have strong beliefs. But, sure. You know, you just can't inflict them on other people. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes both ways. I think people would say, oh, the cake icer guy, you know, he should be able to do what he wants to do.
According to the texters, that's exactly what
they're thinking. Yeah, but it's a different story when you're discriminating against a group of people in a protected class. And, you know, it seems kind of hypocritical in some ways, but I think the law makes sense. We can't be doing that.
Yeah. All right, Kevin. Well, thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you for that. It's a good story.
And it is fun because we had some response. Well, couldn't the couple go to a different bakery? Sure, but then where do you stop that argument? Well, couldn't an African American person go to a different diner back before we got this all sorted?
Do we remember different water fountains? Do we remember different bathrooms? Do we remember different lunch counters? We already decided this stuff.
Yes,
long time ago, and that's not where we're heading. We're not heading back to a place where I can go to a different place and it's just fine if I go where my race.
Yeah, that's a weak argument. We'll just go somewhere else. Well, no, I shouldn't have to. The point is you shouldn't have to go to a different place. And somebody says, well, the store owner's religious freedom supersedes the First Amendment. I don't even know what that means because it's not a first. We're not having a First Amendment argument or First Amendment discussion.
No.
You know, and somebody's sexuality is not a First Amendment issue. It's not a freedom of speech issue. It's who they are. So.
You know, the bottom line is that we've decided this a long time ago that if you have a public accommodation, a public place, and you cannot discriminate based upon race, age, gender, all those kinds of things. Right. You just can't do that. And do you have your rights to believe? You do, but you can't discriminate against people.
So the Supreme, and going back, so let's go back to this case. We'll come full circle. The case isn't about... The case comes down to where if a gay couple is a protected class, right?
Yes.
So that's what the Supreme Court will be arguing. That's the crux of this whole thing.
And the second part of it is they have laws in Colorado, like we do in Illinois, mm-hmm. that says you cannot discriminate against gay people.
Right.
Okay, which is a step up. And the question is, are those laws constitutional if they conflict with somebody's personal religious beliefs? Mm-hmm. So those are the two issues that the Supreme Court needs to address.
All right. Now, you know, then I love the text line because sometimes you get good information. I hate the text line because sometimes you just get bad information. Somebody's saying discrimination against, and I'm going to read it verbatim to show, because I like sometimes for people to know what's up. Discrimination against blacks is not a religious matter, but condoning gay marriage is. People quoted the Bible during discrimination, you know, that was the big thing. That was exactly what they were, how they were justifying discrimination back in the day. So let's not try to parse out our discrimination.
And again, I'm not really good at quoting the scripture, but there is plenty in the Bible that says that handicapped people are that way for a reason, and that you can discriminate against them and you can shun them. And that's right in the Bible.
It's in the Bible.
You know, if you
a lot
want,
of people
you,
twist the Bible for
course,
their own thing.
Of course, and these are different readings and different interpretations, but does that mean that if a person is in a wheelchair, comes in, I can say, you know what, I have to shun you because my church tells me to do that?
How can people get a hold of you during the week? Sorry, we got to, because all of a sudden it's like, oh,
call
we got to get
call me, 312-332-7800 or kconti at kcontilaw.com.
Wednesday at 7:40 with Steve Cochran?
That's right.
Not 6, 7:40. That's right.
It's
6:40. I was letting you sleep a little later.
No, don't.
All right, 6:40. Thank you. We'll see. Right. You will be here next week. You're not going to be in another sunny locale?
No, I won't.
All right, fantastic. Karen Conti, get a hold of her during the week. We'll do this, and it's news time, WGN. Thanks for listening and being part of the program. We will talk to you again next Sunday night. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Cody. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you are an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Rick Kogan comes your way after the news. It is 9 o'clock. Here's Roger Badish.